Welcome to the Mind Muscle Podcast. Here's your host, Simon Devere.
I'm Simon Devere, and there is nothing new except all that has been forgotten. So anyway, you know, I like to take and find, you know, current trends in health and fitness and you know, place them in a historical context, or at least explore the science under it, or maybe some of the ideas that are pushing people this direction. And so over the last few years, I've seen this phrase coined that sitting is the new smoking. And as I was prepping for this show, I was just kind of checking around the internet to see what was out there. And like, you even just search for that on YouTube, you're going to get at least 5 different TED Talks over like the last few years with the same title. So anyway, I know this is an idea that is being, you know, pushed out there. Sitting is the new smoking. You're probably hearing this on a lot of different platforms. So today I want to take a deep dive into the topic of sitting and evaluate the claim that sitting is the new smoking. But yeah, as we do, before I get into the discussion on the modern science we have on sitting, I actually want to take a quick tour through some actually great philosophers, thinkers, writers, and just some thoughts that they had presented to us over the ages on, I guess these don't, you know, directly relate to sitting, but one of the things I had noticed with a number of the writers that I've read over the years is that walking in particular seems to be a central feature and a least common denominator of, honestly, countless writers. I did put together like a short list, but this list could be much longer, and I could have included way more quotes because just about every good writer seems to have a quote on writing that I was able to find, or on walking rather. But yeah, I think one of the first ones I at least think about with you know, walking. Let's go back to Aristotle. Aristotle's followers did so literally. They didn't get on social media and, you know, do what we do today. They actually had to literally walk around and follow him if they wanted to get his lecture, because that's how they taught at the academy. And Aristotle's academy, you know, certainly was actually, this was something that many of the other schools, the Pythagoreans, you know, among them also shared. But walking was a central part of how classes were conducted. We may get into talking about this later, but that might be something that I would like people to consider in schools today. I'm not so sure why we got away from that model, to be honest. But yeah, so Aristotle, he, big fan of walking, conducted all his classes on the move, as did many of the other classic Greek schools. And obviously, I'm sure this is present in countless other places. But then as we get into a lot of the philosophers I like, Immanuel Kant has got, you know, some big dialogues on the importance of his walk. He was very famous for that. Friedrich Nietzsche, he was famous also for walking. Like many writers, he was said to have composed his prose while walking. Virginia Woolf, another one, you know, a writer famous for composing her works while on the walk. Jean-Paul Sartre, existentialist philosopher who we've maybe mentioned a couple times, he was very famous for walking on Paris. They literally call it the philosopher's walk. There's like one famous time he deviated from his routine. I'm blanking on it. Should have written it down for you guys. But you know, Jean-Paul Sartre was so regimented about his walk, and it was so regular that, you know, people would come and observe and see the philosopher, the famous philosopher, on his walk. Beethoven was said to have done all of his compositions while walking. And then another existentialist philosopher that I want to bring in, Soren Kierkegaard. He was basically famous for two things, walking and writing. And then one other thing we may jump into later, Kierkegaard also wrote on a standing desk. So, you know, I do find it funny because we've probably talked, and we're going to get into this later, by the way, but there's so many things that people think are new. Oftentimes, we've probably seen people talking about standing desks. But again, for those of us that were born in the late 20th century, earliest 21st century, perhaps, we're just kind of getting into the game a little bit too late to be doing anything entirely new. So again, there's nothing new except all that's been forgotten, even these standing desks I love. But yeah, I actually wanted to open the show on a quote from Thoreau in his essay titled Walking. And he says that, "I think I cannot preserve my health and spirits unless I spend 4 hours a day at least, and it's commonly more than that, sauntering through the woods and over the hills and fields, absolutely free from all worldly engagements. You may safely say a penny for your thoughts or £1,000, when sometimes I'm reminded that the mechanics and shopkeepers stay in their shops not only all forenoon, but all the afternoon too, sitting with crossed legs, so many of them, as if the legs were made to sit upon, and not to stand or walk upon. I think they deserve some credit for not having committed suicide a long time ago." And sorry to chuckle at the morbid suggestion at the end. I could have cut that line out, and I think the quote would have had much of the same impact. But the reason that I left it in there, for me, this was something that I actually realized in myself at about the age of 18. This was when I figured out how important walking or just movement was for my mental health. So, you know, this just takes me back to being a freshman at UNCW. My very first semester in college, you know, you guys remember that shift. If you've been through that in life, you go from high school into college. For me, the most profound change was just scheduling. You know, when you're in high school, everything is just kind of regimented and set up for you. You know, go to school 8 to 3, most of us do. If you have sports, you know, that happens after school, you go right into it. In college, you know, it was different. You kind of had to build your own time. There was nobody to, you know, push you from one class to the next. If you didn't go, nobody even cared, quite frankly. But anyway, when I first got into college, I had those, you know, time management challenges going on. But hand in hand with that, for me, at least, was I was actually busier than I had been in high school. And it wasn't all, you know, coursework. There's a lot of other stuff going on. And with all the things that I had going on in my day in college, early on, I just noticed that there were a few days when I felt like I had just been inside all day. I hadn't gotten much movement in. And I actually just started to notice that my mood, you know, just was pretty obviously affected by that. You know, to put it colloquially, you know, I often behaved like an asshole if I had been inside all day. And again, as I was at UNCW, Wilmington, North Carolina, folks. So this is a, you know, southeastern part of the state. We had a beach about 10 minutes from campus. And then I also started to notice that days that I was at the beach, suddenly I, you know, wasn't afflicted as much by my asshole compulsions. And so I actually started to think that getting outside, moving around might have something to do with it. And to be totally honest, this for me has been the biggest driver to keep me coming back and exercising, why I do it regularly. This for me is how I honestly manage my mental health. So I'm not going to lie and pretend like I don't have physical goals. But the thing with those is that they ebb and flow and they change constantly. So for me, actually, the common denominator in my health and fitness pursuits is actually the mental health. No matter what I am doing, whether I'm doing a hypertrophy cycle, trying to gain some muscle, or whether like right now I'm trying to improve my speed and endurance, the part for me that never, ever changes is the reason that I actually do this stuff is mostly to keep my mental health as, you know, optimal as I can make it. And yeah, you know, honestly, kind of back to the Thoreau line, and I hope it's not too hard, but I don't know, at least for me anyway, life can start to seem not really worth living if I don't get out and move too much. So, you know, I used to think I was weird for thinking that, but, you know, you come across quotes like that and then you realize, oh, this is actually, it's kind of cool in a way that I'm not alone in thinking this, even though it's not the, we're not going to write a Hallmark card with that or anything, but no, it's nice to know you're not alone. And then, you know, I guess just with that again, it almost bothers me. We're going to take a quick side trip and then I swear I'll get back to the topic of the day. But so just this week, there was a post that I saw on Twitter from an activist from Los Angeles, just like me. So, you know, maybe we'll bump into each other one day. Who knows? But the message he was advancing was that anybody who ever intentionally loses weight is doing so because they are fat phobic. So again, I sat and thought about this. I thought about a number of clients that I've worked with over the years with that goal. And again, I just started to think that on the one hand, I know what this guy's talking about, right? I'm not dense. I understand that there's this whole separate discussion, you know, going on in our society around, you know, body image and how people should look and stuff like that. But I guess just what annoyed me about this is that this activist is doing this and many other people do it as well. But we're basically reducing like the point of training or, you know, weight loss down to body image. And while I do understand particularly that this is what the fitness space talks about a lot, this is what people think about a lot, objectively, this actually isn't what brings real people to real trainers. This is just a really narrow lane of what can be accomplished in fitness. I actually took I showed the tweet to a 83-year-old that I'm working with right now. And so she's actually been directed to lose weight, not because she's fat phobic. No, her cardiologist asked her to do it. I don't think that she's, you know, deeply upset with body image. We've actually never talked about that in one of our sessions. We talk a lot about joint pain. We look at, you know, how her heart health is doing. But I can honestly say that like we've never actually done anything to do with body image because the type of client she is, I don't, you know, bust out any calipers and do body fat measurements. It's really not relevant to what we're doing at all. She would frankly offer up that since we have started training, this goes back to March 2020. Something was going on back then. I don't remember, but gyms closed down. And so I got, you know, a rush of clients. She was one of them. So since March 2020 with her cardiology department is UCLA. So that I only mention that so you guys know I'm just not, pulling stuff out of my ass. There's actually other people checking my work on this all the time. I'm not even the one who takes the stats that are getting better. So, it's been a really great case study for me to see. So while, and the amendments we've basically made, we talk about it in the show a lot. We push, pull, hinge, squat. I got her walking a little bit. And so she's actually been taking off some blood pressure medications that she has been on for about 30 years. They've reduced her medication down to the lowest level it's ever been at. They're also taking some measurements in some of her joints. Systemic inflammation has been decreasing. We have trained for intentional weight loss. But I got to be honest, body image never figured into why we were doing what we were doing. And again, most of the she's happy with the weight loss, of course, but it's not because of like body image. She's not going out and, you know, doing a bodybuilding show or running out to the beach or anything. Honestly, she's just getting up and down the stairs a lot easier, getting the stuff she needs done in life a lot easier. All that just to mention that I do think many people are actually, when they think health and particularly the fitness side, that we're thinking a very narrow lane. And obviously, you know, that's something that I want to do, particularly with this show, but just highlight that there's a lot of other reasons, not only why, you know, real people are training, but also I think that for some people who don't, you know, naturally gravitate to fitness and think that this is, you know, their world. You're wrong. This is your world. There's a lot of other things we can do here besides all these goals that you're frankly not interested in. I just think that the general benefits of moving and exercise go far beyond body image. And trust me, if that's your motivation to get into fitness, you want a six pack, I'm going to use that. That is the carrot I will dangle. But that's not the only thing that I hope we accomplish in training, if that makes any sense to you guys. So now that we've, you know, kind of just carved out my obligatory preamble and, you know, setting the stage. Let's actually first now just talk about the current state of sitting. Cause the main thing I want to do today, guys, again, is to let's actually focus on evaluating that claim that sitting is the new smoking. Is, you know, is this just a big new fear tactic people are throwing out there, or is there perhaps something to this? So first, let's just kind of get the current state of sitting. The average American right now sits about 7 hours per day. And what's troubling about this is that 8 hours is what is considered excessive sitting. And then when we get into age ranges, we see that not all populations are behaving the same. So toddlers and preschoolers, you know, roughly age 2 to 4, they're spending an average of about 6 hours a day doing some form of physical activity and about 1.5 hours of some form on screen time. So now these numbers are going to change dramatically when we move up to children that are older. So young kids are actually one of the cohorts that is doing the worst on this right now. We're looking at about an average of just 1.5 hours a day of physical activities. And then we're looking at over 2 hours a day of screen time. And then obviously they're going to have the time that they are in school, which is not Aristotle's Academy. So I don't know how much walking they're going to get throughout their day here and there to classes. But so yeah, disturbingly, we have children 12 to 19 averaging about 8.2 hours per day. This number goes down slightly in young adults, 20 and over, we're looking at about 6.4, but adults as a population are not doing particularly well. Our average office worker is sitting about 15 hours a day, and sedentary jobs just broadly have increased about 83% since 1950. So 20% of the workforce today has physically active jobs. If we go back to 1950, that number was closer to 50%. So a big part of this, I know folks are going to blame technology. I certainly will. I'm not going to defend screen time. But one of the aspects that people have no choice over, their work, I think is also one of the major factors driving the amount of sitting folks are doing. And then obviously where I live in Los Angeles, commuting is another one that would pop to mind here. So, you know, you probably don't have it as bad as we do here in Southern California, but most of us are also doing a significant time sitting just as we go to and from work. So again, the side effects from too much sitting, we're going to assess, you know, whether this claim that sitting is the new smoking is, you know, really all that it's being hyped up to be. Well, we kind of alluded to the first one. And so what I anecdotally noticed as a freshman at UNCW, this has also been proven, but anxiety and depression. If you're, you know, getting too excessive sitting, great chance that you wind up experiencing one of those. Sitting long periods of time, they really are actually going to increase your risk of obesity. Not too hard to kind of figure out why. Obviously, if you were moving around, we'd be burning, you know, more energy. So it's going to come with an increased risk of obesity, also high blood pressure, high cholesterol, stroke, heart disease, cancer, and obviously every one of these factors can compound and contribute to other troubles as we age. So yeah, people with the most sedentary lifestyles are, you know, roughly twice as likely to develop cardiovascular disease. Diabetes, you're going to be at roughly like 112% increased risk. There was one study done on this where actually just in just 5 days of bed rest, this study observed increases in insulin resistance, which is a precursor to diabetes. So again, just 5 days of inactivity was all it took to observe significant rises. And then again, it's actually also going to increase a number of different cancers. I didn't even write them all down because it's a lot. So we'll just call it as increasing your cancer risk. So also, I think it's actually worth mentioning that so it's not the act of sitting itself that is, you know, going to kill you. It's actually just the repercussions of moving too little. And it is kind of this this compounding effect of the effects that start to happen. So obviously we can quote the scientific literature on the risks that are going to be associated, you know, with certain health things, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, all the stuff that we just mentioned. But, you know, admittedly, the stuff that I get to see personally day to day, we're going to talk more about the impacts to sitting to your body. And then it just follows from that, that obviously these impacts that sitting is having on your body are going to compound, trickle down, and influence every one of those health negative health outcomes that we mentioned, but again, just think of it as a combination of negative factors that just start to compound and build up on you. So this is one that I just see a lot in just about every session, but everybody that I know, we're all dealing with the same thing. We commute, we work, everybody's sitting too much. So the main thing I see there is we're going to have tight or actually even shortened hip flexors. And, you know, I've talked about this before, let's spend a little more time on it today. But if you know, think about right now, you're sitting at your desk. So our hip is impinged at roughly 90 degrees. You're not, you know, bearing any load. So all of the muscles are, you know, inactive. They're not, you know, supporting your spine. So we're going to have a weakening of a bunch of muscles here, but also we have that, you know, back to our hip. We're at about 90 degrees impingement when we are just sitting. If you have a keyboard on your desk, you're probably going to, you know, hunch forward. I bet you don't have the best posture when you're typing. And so just imagine that posture you take as you are hunched over your desk typing. So if we advance this out many years, what this starts to look like is something that we call upper crossed syndrome. So the image that I, you know, like to work from first is, you know, Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. You have we have a man sitting here inside of a circle and he's standing more or less making an X. So now if you were to just take that X and kind of fold it over on itself, this is kind of the modern, you know, desk bound office worker build. So there's a number, anybody I know that has an office or desk job, the common things we're going to run to, we're going to have to work on hips. We're going to have to work on lower back as a result of what's going on in your hips. Great chance we're also going to have to work on the elbows, wrists, and the shoulders. And now this actually brings me to something that has just recently popped up and changed my understanding of something that I thought I understood once, but carpal tunnel syndrome, many of us think of it as something that, you know, at least I did. They think of it as something that is caused by repetitive motion. And, you know, while that's certainly part of it, it's actually more accurately described as like a nerve disorder. So, and mainly when we start talking about correcting carpal tunnel syndrome, we're going to be focusing on the nerves between the neck and your hand. So we're going to work on wrist, elbow, shoulder. There's a series of exercises that we'll do to actually just basically restore proper nerve function. So one thing that I don't know if people would directly, you know, draw into one of the impacts of sitting. I know you're thinking about the typing component, but honestly, actually just sitting around with that, you know, bad desk bound posture, this can actually contribute to something like carpal tunnel, which is ultimately, again, a nerve condition. So again, when we really run down all of the side effects of too much sitting, if you will, the truth is that they actually are pretty well correlated to the risk of a smoker. So this whole idea that you've probably seen, you know, out there that sitting is the new smoking. You know me, I would love to just sit here and tell you guys that this is just another one of those things people are exaggerating and fear-mongering over. Unfortunately, I can't. And one of the reasons I actually like the image that people have coined here is that, especially in the context when you think about the way that we used to think of smoking, at least you've got the pictures of like a doctor in a doctor's office smoking. I honestly think that one day, that is going to look as obviously stupid as, you know, having a classroom full of like, you know, 30 kids just sitting for 8 hours a day. I actually think one day people are going to look back and think that each of those was equally uninformed. And just how did people ever think that this was good at all? So we're going to co-sign this. I think that framing this as sitting is the new smoking is fair. When we consider the health risks that are associated with excessive sitting, when we consider how many people are currently in that population, and also just the general social acceptance and the way we have structured our lives indicates that it just looks like we haven't thought too much about this. So yeah, I am totally cool actually co-signing the idea that sitting is the new smoking. We've just become a little bit too cavalier, and we just haven't really done enough work to structure our days, our lives, our work environments in ways that are conducive for our health. So this is going to be just a kind of frustrating, but you know, inconvenient truth. I'm a trainer, so I would love to tell you that, you know, all you got to do is just schedule a workout with someone like me and then problem solved. We got it. But actually, that's not enough. Even if you, you know, call me up, hire me 5 days a week, it's frankly not enough. And not only that, actually, with that excessive sitting, you can actually undo the benefits that you got from your workout. So this really is a frustrating bit. But if your day is set up where you're actually sitting excessively over 8 hours, in a sense, when we're talking about the health issues, you might have a picture of health. You might have a beach body. But this is not going to scale well for your health if you keep running this out and your workout actually isn't even mitigating the negative impacts of sitting too much. So the reason that I bring this up is that we aren't going to be able to address this with a training session, with a dedicated workout. And again, that can sound, you know, frustrating up front, but then I just remind people that, you know, every other animal in nature can manage this, you know, intuitively without working out. I don't know if you guys have ever gone on any safaris or nature hikes or anything, but you will notice you have never come across an animal in nature working out. They don't budget, you know, 60 to 90 minutes and then move around and then that's it. No, animals, you know, they spend all day being the animal they are. You know, when a lion gets into a hunt, it doesn't have to, you know, do any warm-up drills or priming exercises. It just goes. It chases a gazelle. And I think it's capable of doing that because it spends 24 hours a day being a lion. And I don't mean this in, you know, just the modern zeitgeist, you know, is going to use this term in one context. So I'll just say I don't mean it in this context at all. But there's most of us today just don't spend 24 hours being a man, not in a gendered sense, in a you know, big broad sense, the human. There really isn't much in modern life that descends from our biology. So we shouldn't really have an expectation that by, you know, getting up early in the morning, getting a workout, then sitting in a car, sitting at the office, sitting in the car to come back home, sitting down to watch TV. I honestly think it would be irrational to have an expectation of good health outcomes if that's what we're putting forward, because look at how many hours a day we are actually spending in the way our body was designed to be. So yeah, this is where might be frustrating, but I think we'll be able to communicate it well enough that we're not really going to be advocating a workout here. You know, I'm not going to, you know, program, you know, something very specifically. The main lesson that we all need to take with movement is quite frankly, just get moving early and often. We're actually going to move the needle on this. We're going to actually have to build movement into the day. So one of the easiest ways, depending on where you live, what you have going on, active transport. This is going to be one of the best ways just to ensure that you're actually getting sufficient movement through the day. So if it is possible for you where you could bike or walk, and heck, maybe it's take the kids to school. I don't know what your situation is, but this is what we're going to have to do, is we're going to have to find ways that we can just build movement into the day. Let's say that you can't, you know, bike or walk to work or take the kids to school. You know, you certainly can park farther away. And again, I live in Los Angeles, so I see this every day where the parking spots that are closest to the door are always the ones everybody wants. And ironically, I park farther away just because I value my time. And I can't tell you how many times I watch people fighting for these spots, you know, up close. And it's like, dude, I'm going to be in the store before you anyway. So on the one hand, you know, maybe keep competing for those spots so I can keep beating you guys in and out of all the places that we're lining up for. But honest to God, it would be better for your health and your time management if you just took the first spot available and walked in. Anyway, and then, yeah, you know, a lot of us are at offices. Just want to remind you guys that there's something called the stairs that does exist. Yes, it's going to, you know, take just a little bit longer. But it, honestly, there's going to be some huge benefits to popping down those stairs every now and again. So again, we really, really have to consider that we need to actually just build movement into the day whenever we can. So now, again, I actually think the biggest culprit here for most people is going to either be work or school. So let's be honest, there's not a lot of options that you're going to have in that context to, you know, you can't just get up in the middle of meeting, walk away. if, you know, you've got to get some work done, maybe you do got to sit there and plug away. So anyway, couple ideas that I think we can bring in to, most workplaces. And then frankly, I'd actually even like to see them do this first one in schools, but early on when we were talking about all the great thinkers who already realized it was a good idea to move throughout the day. Soren Kierkegaard, I mentioned that he did most of his composition at a standing desk. So this is one that I've been advocating for a lot of people. I get it that, you know, maybe your office won't allow it. If you're working from home, if you can get one, highly recommend the standing desk. So actually right now I am in my office and, I'm not at the standing desk, but I do have a standing desk. So I wanted to give you guys just one tip if you are setting one of these up. So what I basically did when I was, you know, I built my own, but I just basically went up to the wall and then we're basically marking out about the height of my elbow so that if I just basically bend my elbow and hold my hand straight ahead, a keyboard's going to be right under my hands. So that's roughly the height that you're going to want your standing desk set at is basically what is your elbow height. That's going to be a great height for you to set the keyboard at. And then, the computer I have over there is just a laptop. So, you know, adjust it accordingly to the height of your keyboard. But that's what we ultimately want is that if you were to just naturally hold your arm straight ahead, your keyboard should be right under your hands. And then that's going to be just a really comfortable environment for you to sit or stand rather and get a bunch of work done. But you'll be able to type just as fast as if you were, you know, sitting in your hunched over normal office work posture. And so actually, you know, I mentioned I'm actually not at the standing desk right now. I am at a conventionally sized desk. And what I've done over here, though, is I actually don't use a typical office chair. This is where I've gotten good use out of my stability ball. So whenever I actually sit at my desk, I am actually sitting on a stability ball. So the difference there is that if I am sitting on a chair instead of my stability ball, my core, my glutes, my hip flexors are just completely inactive, dead, atrophying, doing nothing. So again, the stability ball, just to sit on it, you know, let's not oversell this. I don't want to sell this as like a six pack trick. You're not going to get visible abs by sitting on a stability ball, but sitting on the stability ball is going to keep your hip flexors active. You're going to have to resist that thing rolling around on the ground. It's going to keep all of the muscles that you don't typically think of when you think of core. But remember, the point of a core is to support a spinal column. So all of those little muscles besides the abdominals that, you know, people don't spend much time thinking about, but you don't have to think about them when you're sitting on a stability ball because you will just use them or fall on the ground. And so that'll be a nice feedback mechanism to keep your core nice and active and then also just mitigate some of the negative impacts that we would get from sitting. So this is just some way that I think a lot of people could get away with. If you still have to sit there and plug away at a desk, just, you know, see if you can sneak a stability ball in there. And I'll be honest, a lot of these things get back to, are you willing to be different than everybody else? Because I'd be willing to bet that there's not like a real like hard rule against this. The reason that most people don't do it is just, you know, the convention aspect and you just want to look like everybody else and do things so nobody looks at you funny. But yeah, if you don't have like a strict policy in your office banning stability balls, you could probably get away with this just as long as you can, you know, deal with being slightly different than other people. So now there's also a couple other techniques that I want to throw in. So again, I know a lot of people, the function of your workday, this is just going to be the biggest challenge because, you know, you're not going to quit your job. You have to work within the confines of what's acceptable. So, yeah, we're kind of limited, but we also have some hours outside of work. And so I just want to tie in one idea that I've been using. So, and then admittedly, because I honestly feel sometimes a little bit preachy up here. Just because of the way, you know, I'm disseminating this information, it can come off like I'm doing everything perfect all the time. And I just want to remind everybody that I've been aware of this for a long time, and I have been struggling to make these changes in my own life too. But anyway, all that to say, one of my worst habits that I haven't been able to kick is social media. So I'm only active on, you know, one platform currently. But I have just made a personal agreement with myself that if I ever want to just scroll this feed, that I need to be doing it while in a deep primal squat. So we've discussed this position in the past. So I'm not going to give you guys the gross details here. But again, I just call it the squat and scroll. If I am ever going to scroll a feed, then I will sit down in my deep squat. And then, you know, eventually you get tired of being there and then I'm done scrolling. But that is some way that I can actually take a bad habit that I have and admittedly enjoy somewhat. I like the dopamine fixes that I get from social media periodically. So yeah, I know what I'm doing. It's not good for me. I shouldn't get too used to it. So I at least tie this negative behavior that I nonetheless like doing to something that is positive and will actually give me some lasting benefit. So once I stand up from that squat, even though I've actually accomplished nothing on social media, at least my hips are a little bit more mobile. At least my ankles got a little work, my knees, etc. So again, I actually love this idea. You know, take this one from me, the squat and scroll. We should all be spending a little less time on social media. And if we're going to do it, let's at least get some positive benefit from it. This is actually really, really similar to something I noticed one of my clients telling me about that I really liked. So anyway, we also talked recently about all that zone 2 cardio work that I'm liking. And I'm not just pushing that on the podcast to you guys. I've been pushing this to the clients that it's good for. And one woman I'm working with has bought in, and she is doing a half an hour on her treadmill on a steep incline. And she was really honest with me and just told me that, Simon, I hate it. Don't like doing it at all. But what's cool, and I actually didn't even come up with this one for her, but what she started doing is there is a, I forget the name. I wish I knew it so I could throw under the bus, but it's just one of these like trashy reality shows where like people go to an island and hook up with each other. And she, like me and my social media habit, she knows she shouldn't really spend time in the day watching this, but I'm going to do it anyway. So what's been cool is she's been taking the iPad out to the treadmill, cranking it up on a nice incline. And she just made a personal agreement with herself that this is going to be the only place that she can watch her favorite trashy reality show. So again, this is also one of my favorite techniques to get people to do things that we don't want to do, is let's actually tie something that that we really do enjoy to the activity that maybe we don't love as much. So so yeah, whether that looks like what I do, you know, getting into my squat and scroll from my social media habit, or whether you just take an iPad to go watch that show you're embarrassed to tell your pretentious friends that you even watch. These are actually going to be great ways, again, not only to build movement in the day, but to make sure that we're actually having a little bit of fun while we're doing it. And believe it or not, that's actually important too. And One thing I actually just want to tie into this, I talk about this all the time with my clients when I'm talking about building this type of stuff into their day. But again, I just recently went through this period of watching a human being, you know, go from not being able to, you know, pick her head up off the ground to walking, jumping, climbing, et cetera. And of course, I'm talking about a small child. How is it that small children go from not being able to do anything to acquiring all of the skills that all the rest of us have? And again, if you just watch kids throughout the day, what you'll see is they're just in constant movement. This is frankly one of those things that I think, you know, when you hear people say that, you know, kids are tiring, I think a big part of it is that actually the kids just haven't given up on life yet. Sorry to be so blunt, but no, they're not content to just sit still and let the day go by. And let's be honest, they're not doing anything. They don't have any amazing program that they're running through. They just constantly move. They constantly play. So yeah, I honestly think a lot of the best movements, again, this is why I'm not really talking today about like a dedicated workout. Just think in terms of movement. I'll hear people, you know, extolling the virtues of, you know, whatever the latest dance craze is. You know, whether it's, you know, Zumba or maybe now everybody wants to play pickleball or, every one of these things is great. I don't want to discourage any one of them, but I just want to draw people's mind back to why these things are good. Is that it's all just movement. So anyway, it really doesn't matter how you get your movement in. We just have to get in there early and often. Do the things you like. You know, maybe we'll tie some things we do like into the parts we don't. Get ourselves standing at work. Again, there are a number of different ways, but we really have to have that understanding that we're not going to be able to knock this out in a dedicated workout. This is actually going to really be, this is a big time lifestyle change, as we often say. We just have to start bucking the modern trend, not going with the crowd and just doing things that, again, maybe look a little bit funny, but let's be honest. Do these people actually even come up and talk to you ever? Or, you know, are they just, you know, quietly judging? And is there anything you could do, you know, to stop them from doing that? Whether you're the only guy sitting on a stability ball at work, or you just, you know, combed your hair funny, they're quietly judging anyway. And I can't remember who attribute this quote to, but I love the idea of you will never worry about what other people think about you when you realize how seldom they do. Sure, I just paraphrased it. Actually, David Foster Wallace just came to me. But no, again, I know a lot of this stuff, I'm going to have you the guy walking up the stairs, sitting on the stability ball. They feel like a big deal, but they're really not. And once you kind of get used to carving them out in your day, and you start to feel how they change your mood, your joints, this is the part that actually gets really addictive about exercise. You know, people question me all the time, how are you so regimented? And I think when they frame the question, it's as if that I possess willpower or a skill or something else that they don't possess. And I honestly don't think that's what's at work at all. I have the exact same drive to do all kinds of other things in my life, but the thing that I got addicted to was how I felt. This again is like, it's why it's hard. I will deviate from my plans, but I pay for it every time. So I jump right back onto the plan. So this is again where I just think that the only way to really move the needle against excessive sitting, I would love to say everybody go out and get trainers. Here's a discount code. Here's a sick package. But that's not going to matter. You actually are going to have to just build some movement into the day. There is no way around this one. You know, and mentioned this earlier, I literally, part of why I have this podcast is so that I can dispel popular fitness myths, the exact type of thing this is that gets like 7 TED Talks and everybody's talking about it. I would love to just say that people are overreacting. This is another one of those things that you don't have to fear. But actually, this one is right on point. There's a reason that so many people have been talking about this time. And it isn't that they are, it's not a misalignment of incentives. This is one that I think I am glad that we are seeing a rising awareness. And then again, one of the things that I am most passionate about with this is actually how we are raising our children. Some of us are a lost cause, but the kids aren't. And so again, whenever I go into a school and I just see kids sitting down, I do frankly feel a little bit like looking into a doctor's office and seeing someone smoking. I just don't know how we have come to believe that this is a good idea, and that particularly that this is helping our kids. That is one that I'm extremely passionate about. And obviously anybody who knows me through, school and being around my kid, I'm not just talking it here. This is literally what we do every single day. And I got to be honest, it's kind of the only thing that I even know about parenting that truly works, if you will, is get your kids moving, get them tired. And then all this stuff about they won't eat this food or they won't go to bed at this time. Just get them tired and, let me know how that goes. This for me has just been the single most reliable parenting technique I have. And so, when I'm looking at schools that my daughter might be attending, this is why I care. How is the day structured? How much time do you guys spend in here? What do you do outside? This is something that I will probably be that pesky parent who's probably trying to put standing desks into places. Maybe give them the choice. I don't know. But this isn't something that I'm going to, take lightly or lay down on, particularly with my own child. And apology to anybody in the same class with her, because I'm not really going to let the status quo fly. And particularly when we're talking like school reforms, just nobody's talking about the stuff that I care about, which almost like gets back to my same point of like, I don't know, you guys sound like you need to get offline and get outside a little bit more, see what's actually going on with kids. And getting them moving, getting them outside, getting them standing. I just think this would improve health outcomes and academic outcomes. And again, I am not the person who invented this idea. The Greeks kind of did this for a reason, I feel like. There's a reason why so many people were out walking all the time. This is just one that, again, I think I'm most passionate about it as it pertains to kids. But then again, in my day job, I see this every day. And so that's why I even feel like a broken record bringing it up, because the vast majority of problems that people have today really are, coming from excessive sitting. The reason I always tell you that everybody has, hip problems, again, we're talking about the sitting. The upper cross syndrome that I see, all of this stuff, the least common denominator, everything here harkens back to that we are just simply inactive too much of the day. So again, 8 hours a day, this is what is considered excessive sitting. And at that level, we do have a similar risk of many negative health outcomes as smoking. This is not hype. This is not, people trying to scare us. There are very, very real negative impacts from excessive sitting. And then this was actually something that I started to do somewhat recently with clients, but basically every smartphone now has, we can look over the amount of screen time that people are spending, on their phones each day. And so for those that are open to it, they have allowed me to look at the screen time. I actually saw this first as an average, and I couldn't believe it. The study said that the average American was spending 10 hours on a screen. And I do the mental math and I'm like, this sounds like bullshit. That can't be possible. So almost out of curiosity, I started to, you know, look at people's screen time. And I got to be honest, the figures are probably right. I have actually seen multiple individuals with over that number. And actually, these were folks who weren't really identifying as being on the phone all that much. Just the number of interruptions that we wind up having in a day. You wind up on the phone quite a bit. So again, between work, the screens, the way our schools are structured, this really is one of the most common problems that people are suffering from. And again, it really is carrying as serious a health risk as smoking. So I really am hopeful that at least with the number of people, you know, talking about this, that we can start to make some pretty serious changes, because that's actually what it's going to take. We can't just get people motivated to go join gyms and exercise. We're going to have to actually change, you know, the structure of our work, work, school, and frankly, just how we move throughout the day. Anyway, I do want to leave you guys on just one more Nietzsche quote, of course. And again, you know, Nietzsche was famous for actually composing most of his works while walking. And one of his quotes that I just love and always resonated with me was something to the effect of, never trust an idea that comes to you indoors. And this is something I think about often as I am, you know, working out, running, whatever. But for me anyway, this is when my mind is by far the most active. So I really understand why so many creative people have had this as just a central aspect of their creative process. Because when I go out and work out in the morning, I actually can't stop my mind from running. This is when I'm, you know, constantly getting ideas. I jot down notes. And yeah, some are good, some are bad. But without that, I really don't know, you know, how in touch with my own ideas that I would be. Because at least for me throughout the day, I kind of have got into this idea that I don't know if I want to trust any ideas that I have when I'm sitting inside for 8 hours in a row. I don't know if I want to pay attention to that voice. So again, me personally, exercise really hasn't just been about the physical aspect, but mainly the mental health is what keeps me coming back. And frankly, I'm not alone in recognizing that. There are countless creative individuals who have found just the benefits of regular movement. And as we now know today, it's not just about some ethereal feeling or some mystic thing that these romantic artist types are doing. There are real negative health impacts that are going to descend and compound from excessive sitting. And so, yeah, as much as I would love to, you know, shout out against the, you know, the common narrative, this is one that we actually have to take seriously. So yeah, again, just to sum it up, get moving early and often. Check back on, we've already talked to here about building a daily movement practice. And this is more the vein that we're going to need to be thinking to address this issue of excessive sitting. No big workout program today. This is another one when I'm just going to sound like your grandma and tell you, use the stairs, park farther away, get moving early. With that effort, then we actually can mitigate, you know, a number of the negative health impacts that are coming from sitting, which is really quite significant. So anyway, guys, with that, I'm not going to burn up any more of your time. Remember, mind and muscle are inseparably intertwined. There are no gains without brains. Let's keep lifting and growing. We'll do it again soon.
Mind Muscle has been brought to you by The Antagonist. Visit us at antagonistblog.com.